It's a very magical experience. I mean, I've never got to have this experience before, but it does feel like a dream come true. It's all the cliches that people say, and it honestly is. And, you know,
it's an honor just to be nominated.
It is. Yeah. Uh-huh. I've already won.
You've won.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome to The Envelope. I'm Kelvin Washington alongside Yvonne Viridiel. We also have Mark Olson here as well. And, you know, we've done it all when it comes to the Oscars. We've talked about nominations. We've talked about the Oscar nominee luncheon. And now we got to talk about what you actually want to see from the telecast. And there's so many different ways we can go about this. If it is someone you just want to see maybe win, but even more broader, it can be just things that you're into. Say, this is why it's going to be great or what I want to see. Yvonne, I'll start.
Conan O'Brien.
Okay, there we have it.
Could you be more specific, please?
This is really
Conan
a thing
O'Brien.
With you.
O'Brien, yes.
As a person who always thought late night was in his future, Conan was always one of the guys I loved.
Yes.
The dry humor, the wit, the self-deprecation and all that.
I thought he did a wonderful job last year and I'm really excited. And despite a lot of, you know, turmoil in his life that was happening at the same time, I'm really excited to see like what he's going to deliver this time around. I could really use a laugh. I know I'm not alone, but I'm very excited to see. And, you know, he was in a film this year, too. So it'll be interesting to see if we get any gags with him and Rose Byrne. I would love that. She obviously is very funny. I'm also very much looking forward to a performance by the K-pop Demon Hunters for Golden. Yeah. I need to get up out of my seat. That's what I'm excited for.
Well, trust me, my daughters will be right there with you. My goodness.
It'll be a moment.
I don't even know when. I'm like, when did you learn all the lyrics? Like, I don't, in my mind, I don't see this happening yet. They know every single
Osmosis.
Word.
Osmosis, yeah.
What about you?
Well, I think it's interesting, you know, last year with Sean Baker sort of like sweeping and winning so many awards, that this year, you know, there seems to be this head-to-head battle happening between Sinners and one battle after another. And it's going to be interesting to see if Oscar voters kind of go with the sweep where they kind of lean heavily to one or the other, or if they kind of spread it around. If it does end up being, let's say, like, one battle for best picture, but Ryan Coogler best director, or you can flip that around. Like, you know, another category I'm interested in is original screenplay. It'd be amazing to see the Iranian filmmaker Jafar Panahi win for best original screenplay. But then in like Oscar sort of calculus, then that means that like you want Ryan Coogler to win in a different category. So it's funny how like the domino, you know, the puzzle pieces all need to come together in a specific way. And it's going to be interesting to see if Oscar voters do what they did last year and just put all the chips on the table in what for, you know, one film.
You know, you took something I was looking for. My point was going to be with Sinners getting all of those nominations. It's almost now the pressure of winning most of them, maybe not all, because you don't want to be nominated 16 and you win two.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be win three. So it's like, thanks for the noms, but we only won a handful. So that's what I'm going to be watching. You know, if you win 10 out of 16, oh, that's huge or something like that. I'll be watching.
Yeah, those craft categories that'll be kind of like earlier in the show could be very telling as far as like what's going to happen later in the night.
Yep. And then again, got to shout out producer Matt here. I'm stealing this one from him. Teyana Taylor, anytime she wears anything, becomes a thing, as we all know. So what, you know.
Anytime you wear anything, it becomes a thing. Look at that.
Thank you. I'm not a Usher at a Laker game.
No.
I'm not Harry Potter's best friend.
After hours, we don't know. But okay. For now, you're not. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I always get when I wear this. So, all right.
But, you know, when we spoke to Teyana Taylor at the Oscar nominees luncheon, she said that she had a vision for her Oscar dress.
Oh.
And so I'm like, I can't wait to see what that is.
I'm not the only one here. Jump on a limb. She's going to smoke it. Whatever it is. She's going to absolutely crush that for sure. All right. So swinging it back to you, Yvonne, I want to hear a little bit more about your conversation. You got to sit down with Elle Fanning and starring in Sentimental Value. How was that?
It was great. You know, Elle is this veteran actress. She's not even, 30 years old yet. She's been in the scene for a long time. She's nominated for Sentimental Value in what is essentially this very meta role where she's playing this American movie actress who's really seeking a creative challenge, and she's cast in this Norwegian film that sort of gets caught up in some dysfunctional family drama. And we sort of dive into like her own, you know, experience in Hollywood and the transition from child actor to adult actor, and also seeking that challenge. And when she sort of came into her own and voicing her feelings about roles. And it was a really fun conversation. And I felt like I hadn't accomplished a lot at my age.
Well, listen, we still have plenty of time to accomplish some more, all right? Yvonne and Elle, here's their conversation now.
Well, joining me today is Elle Fanning. Congratulations on your nomination for Sentimental Value.
Thank you so much. Hello.
You're at the Oscars nominees luncheon. Tell me what this experience has been like for you. Just wrapped. Who were you eager to see?
You know, I had an epic table. I was sitting next to Steven Spielberg. In a lot of ways, you know, he worked, you know, with my sister in War of the Worlds. And I was like a five-year-old running around on set. And we were kind of reminiscing about that. And one of his youngest daughter is one of my closest friends. So growing up, we went to the same school and I'd have sleepovers at Steven's house. But
normal,
not relatable. I understand that. But to be with him, someone that has known me since I was 5 years old, and to share this experience and get to sit next to him was really, really special. And then also, which was a surprise, so Ruthie Carter, who did the costumes for Sinners, she also was at my table. And she comes up to me and she's like, I don't know if you'll remember. And I'm like, gosh, she looks so familiar. But I'm also like, well, you're a super famous costume designer. So in my head, I'm like, well, I know you because I know you. But she said, I did the costumes for Daddy Daycare.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, when I was 4 years old.
Yes.
And that was one of my first movies ever. I mean, I was tiny. And she's like, I just remember. And she said, you look exactly the same. You just look stretched out. I'm like, yeah, that's pretty much, that's right. And then we actually got to stand next to each other in the class photo.
Oh, wow. That's
which
so
was,
special.
Yeah, very moving. So
were you taking lots of selfies in there?
I was. My manager was with me, who's been with me since I was like 8 or 9 years old. And so we were taking a lot of selfies together. I didn't take my phone up to do the class photo, but I know some other people were and they were videoing. And I'm like, oh, darn. I wish that I took the phone up. But sometimes you got to live in the moment, you know, put the phones away. Let's live in the moment.
I can't do that. But I'll try.
I'll try.
Before we get into the film, though, I mean, I know you and Dakota spent a lot of time in your younger years doing make-believe. And I want to talk to you about A Baby Story later on. But because I related with that.
Remember the TLC show?
Yes. I feel like no one remembers it but you and I, okay?
It was so
good. But was Oscar something you guys, like, thought about then, like doing your fake speeches at that age?
Everyone's done that, right? I mean, I think we all have to say we've gone to the bathroom. And what is that? Who is that? I think it's Kate Winslet that says she keeps her Oscar in the bathroom so people can go in there and hold it and do that in the mirror. I'm like, that is so fun. I don't think I've ever held an Oscar before or anybody's that. But of course, I mean, I started doing this when I was 2 years old and, you know, watched my sister grow up in this business. And of course, we've dreamed of this. It's something that feels unattainable. And and you also have to know, you know, that you're doing it for the right reasons. And I'm doing this because I absolutely love it. But then this is a very magical experience. I mean, I've never got to have this experience before, but it does feel like a dream come true. It's all the cliches that people say, and it honestly is. And, you know,
it's an honor just to be nominated.
It is. Yeah. I've already won.
You've won.
Oh, yeah. In my mind.
Well, I want to get into the film. I mean, Sentimental Value is this meditation on, you know, complex family dynamics and the power of art in healing.
Yes.
And you play Rachel Kemp, an American movie star, searching for deeper artistic meaning in the work that she does. And she's cast by a director played by Stellan Skarsgård to appear in his comeback film that he originally wrote for his estranged daughter to star in.
Yeah.
Tell me what spoke to you about this film. Like, what stood out to you that really resonated with you?
I wish I had you on my press tour to explain the... That was, like, so eloquently. Like, I'm like, that wraps it up perfectly. What drew me to this? Gosh, it was many things. I had come off of filming A Complete Unknown, and I was in New York. I was about to go film another movie in New Zealand, and my agents called me and said, Joachim Trier has a new film and there's a part for an American actress in the role, even though the film is predominantly in Norwegian. It's going to film in Oslo. And from that moment, I was like, oh, I have to do this. And I'm a really instinctual person. And I get feelings. I feel like I'm a little psychic. Like, I just knew, even before I read the script, I don't know what I felt, but there was something really special. And because Joachim Trier also is someone, I mean, the worst person in the world, absolutely loved. It's one of my, like, top favorite films. And that moved me so much the year that it came out. And so he's been on my bucket list to work with. But also, you know, he predominantly works in Norwegian, and I don't speak Norwegian. So I just was like, I don't know if they'll ever be a part for me. But then it appeared, and they were like, okay, well, we're going to set up a Zoom call. You're in New York. He's in Oslo. And so read it as quickly as possible. And I read the script, and it reads like a novel. Like, if you get a chance to read the script, it is so beautiful. And the way that, you know, it opens describing the house, which to me, the house should be nominated for an Oscar as well. It's such an amazing character in the story, and the way that they, Eskil, who is also nominated, he's the co-writer, and the way that they describe this house is so moving, because I think we all have, if it's a time or a place, or it holds so many memories, and they just captured that about this childhood home.
Right.
And then Rachel Kemp, she really struck me, and sometimes you go into a role and you're like, I'm not sure how to play this, or I don't know my way in, but there was something about Rachel. I mean, I am an American actress, you know, like, of course there are similarities, but there was just, I really saw the way I wanted to play her, and I saw the pitfalls that I could have fallen into of the cliches that maybe could happen, that she could become kind of a joke or a silly character. And I really wanted to avoid that. So when I talked to Joachim, I was happy to know we were on the same page of how we wanted Rachel to be presented. I knew it would be a challenge, but it really excited me. So yeah, I had to get the part, but from that meeting, we sealed the deal somehow.
I've been thinking a lot about taking a break, actually. I already have all these projects lined up. They're good enough parts, but they just don't have anything to do with me.
Just say no.
Sam would freak out if I just walked away like that. He'd have a right to.
Fuck Sam. Your life.
Well, tell me more about that, because as you said, you started acting when you were two. I mean, what insights do you have about what the public or culture thinks about young female actors that you brought into this role? Yeah. And like you said, the pitfalls that you sort of strove to avoid as you were coming up in this business.
Yes. I mean, I think it's something that actually Joachim and I talked a lot about, of maybe the struggles or the pressure that Rachel's feeling in her own career. I think, you know, people are really quick to, especially women, but put us into a box of limitations and tell you what you can or can't do. And I feel like I've been really lucky to navigate that. I will say, I feel like the show that I did, The Great, I really felt like I broke out of that mold a little bit. Not that I had done so many things, but I mean, people probably knew me most for Maleficent, but it was then fun to be in The Great, and I'm playing, an empress, but she's not the Disney version. I felt like I came into my own a little bit. And so just to find those meaty roles, but they don't always come along. And I think that's what Rachel is, when we find her, that's what she's yearning for. That's what she's struggling with, is she feels like this emotion inside her that she wants to unleash, but no one's really saw her for her talent. They've maybe seen her for, okay, the shiny movie star, and, you know, you're a bankable actress, but it's not the meaty roles that she is wanting, that she can, you know, finally kind of find another version of herself to show to the world. And when she meets Stellan's character, there's something that he sees in her that she hasn't experienced before. And so playing Rachel, I feel like she's a very different actress than me, but there was part of me that felt like I was kind of drawing from my younger self of maybe how I felt in the past, and kind of bringing that into Rachel, and the discovery of also being like moved by a text. Like, there's a monologue scene that I have that was kind of a tricky scene, because we want to show that Rachel's a good actress, but that she's also, she's just not quite right for the part. Uh-huh. But in that moment, she finds herself like surprising. She's surprised that she's moved by the words. And I don't think that she's ever had that feeling as an actress before. Mm-hmm. And I remember kind of, actually, I remember having that experience for the first time. It was on this film called Phoebe in Wonderland, okay. And I was 9, which actually Lynette Howell produced.
Wow.
She's our president, which is so nuts. I'm like, remember, you know, uh-huh. I mean, everything comes back around, which is super cool. But it was a scene with Patricia Clarkson, and you know, when you're young, you're also trying to follow orders. You know, you're like looking at the scene and I'm like, okay, this scene here, it wants me to cry, or it wants me to get upset, or there's something to it. But the way that this scene was written, it didn't describe what it wanted my character to do. I just had to listen to Patricia Clarkson. She has a long monologue she's saying to my character. So I could really react to it anyway. But we were like sitting in these rafters of a theater filming, and we're in the middle of the scene. I'm on my close-up and Patricia is talking to me, and I'm like looking in her eyes, and I start like crying. From because she's moving me, but that's not where the scene was. That's not how the scene was written.
Okay.
But I just remember, like, oh, this is what acting is. Like at 9 years old, I'm like, this is what it is. It's about the spontaneous moments, about like connecting with your fellow actors and looking and following their lead. And I mean, it's like now I'm always striving for that moment. But I do remember that first moment.
Well, what was that like that unlocked for you? Because like you said, when you're maybe a child doing this work, you're sort of not thinking about the deeper meanings of the things, or you're not searching for, I want to be challenged by a role when you're young.
Right, right.
But like you said, this unlocks something for you. And what did that do for you? Like, were you hungry for more of that? And then how do you sort of chase that feeling?
No, I was hungry. I stay hungry. I'm always, you know, I'm looking for a challenge. Uh-huh. I did realize quite young that I like to scare myself a little bit. I think that nerves have been my friend, and they actually do help me a lot, and it means that I'm probably doing the right thing if I feel pretty scared about it. And then, yes, I mean, of course, when you're young and you're a child actor, you know, you're also having to audition for those roles and go in, and you don't know if you're going to get it. And so there's a lot of, like, luck, and people have to choose you, and there's a lot of that involved. But then as I got older and could really start to shape my career a little bit more, I was really looking for the challenging parts, and I still am. And I don't know, I also kind of approach it in an athletic way, because my family is they're all athletes. They wanted Dakota and I to be tennis stars.
Right.
I played volleyball in school, so I and
you did your part.
Basketball, yeah, tall sports, I did my part.
Ballet.
In that. Ballet, that's true. But I think there's a real I approach a scene, like, I get that feeling that I would assume an athlete gets, or, like, you know, right before they go into a game. There's something about it that the discipline, I really enjoy that.
So you don't have the reaction Renata's character does.
No. Well,
have you had that moment where you're like, I don't know if I can go out there and do this, even on a set?
I don't know if I've had like a panic attack to that degree, but I did my first theater show as a Broadway show, Appropriate Now. That got my heart racing. And it was so odd, because I'm like, we have done this so many times, and I was still nervous that I was going to forget the lines and like be caught there, you know, like in your underwear on stage.
Yeah.
Like, there's just something about it for me. It definitely... I was pretty nervous every show, every show. And then, you know, you sink in and you start to be able to play with the audience a little bit. But the stage, I think because I was so used to film where sometimes the mistakes are the best part. And I guess theater, I'm just not so conditioned in it. But the mistakes can be also a beautiful part of that too. But I think just because I wanted to be perfect, and it's something that I hadn't done before. So I was a little hard on myself in that regard, which definitely made me nervous. I've had, you know, in the great, sometimes I would there, cause there, just the way the rhythm and the way that Tony writes, and he really wanted us to be word perfect, punctuation perfect. So, and a lot of times you're also performing, I was doing a lot of speeches in front of, you know, background artists and that were, you know, in these long, big castle halls. And they're all staring back at you and you're like, oh, gosh, you know, if I go up there and flub this, they're just going to think, why is she here? You know, and so it gets in your head. But then there's something out of that that is those magical moments that you can't recreate that are captured on screen, or like when, you know, and then you blush and you get like Renata does that so beautifully. She like she blushes like on cue and she feels you feel her blood. It's so human. And I always remind myself of that's okay. So it's welcome, but sometimes it can be an uncomfortable feeling.
Well, because we see with your character, I mean, this is a different example of that, but we see with your character, her really trying to connect with this part that she's about to play.
Yeah.
And she's struggling and she's trying to have these conversations and mm-hmm. he's not really giving her insight that she wants to really lock in. And I'm curious, like, we don't often talk about, like, the actor's version of writer's block, but, like, mm-hmm. how do you sort of work through that? Like, for me, it's hard. I gotta go for a walk or go do something.
Yeah.
But how do you sort of power through of, like, I'm not finding it. How do I get there? Do you, like, talk to the director? Like, what has there been a moment like that for you?
You know, that can be hard. I mean, I do feel like you never feel fully prepared on the first day. You're still finding it on the first day, for me at least. And then, yeah, sometimes like you finish the whole movie and then you're like, wait a minute, now I know, you know, I got to go back. I mean, I really rely and lean on the directors. And I think that also, you know, when choosing films, that's why I've, and I think this is developed, but I'm really like more director driven than ever or actor driven than ever of people that I want to work with and that we can be on the same page with and that you can just fully trust with that. I mean, I think that I haven't had a role quite like Rachel where I went so far into a project and then pulled out so last minute, but I've certainly like outgrown roles or was offered roles that I was probably too young to play at the time. Mm-hmm. I remember like I would be offered roles and I had like a, you know, 4-year-old son or something, like way before I should have had a 4-year-old son. And I'm like, well, this isn't right yet. You know, that doesn't. And I think also that's what Rachel's finding herself in. I mean, even I think, you know, the son that, you know, Agnes's son who's hired and cast in it, it's like, well, he's probably a little bit too old to be Rachel Kemp's son. Like she doesn't fit into that character so much. And so I think it's you have to be honest with yourself to be able to walk away or say no for something or be like, I've just outgrown this and it should. You know, I got to give it to someone else. It's not right for me anymore. But yeah, when you are struggling a bit on set with something, yeah, you try to just lean on the director and lean on, you know, it's hard because you need it. I've also learned it's like, God, it starts from the script too. You have to have a good script.
But how do you know that to trust your intuition that it's not right versus
I know.
Am I just uncomfortable and I need to figure out if this is the challenge that I actually am after.
That's true. That's such a good question. Because I am someone that when I get something in my head and it feels wrong, I just can't let it go. I can't let it go. I will talk about it until I'm blue in the face and I will go up to producers and I will, you know, be on set. And now I'm able to produce things now, which is really nice to have a little bit more of a say. So your voice actually kind of counts more in those conversations.
Was there a moment like that on this film where you were like
on Sentimental Value?
Uh-huh.
No, I have to say I never had that on this. When I'm on set, I really am interested in the behind the scenes. I'm interested in where the camera is and I'm interested in how it's going to be shot. And I like to know all those things. But there was something about this experience that I really let it all go. And I don't know if it was because I couldn't speak the language. Just because on set, you know, Joachim would talk to me in English and Stellan would. But, you know, the whole crew, they're speaking Norwegian or Swedish or like to each other. And I didn't, I kind of could have tunnel vision and just let it go and just hand it over to them to not micromanage anything or try to eavesdrop. Because I was like, well, that's not really my job here. And I just trusted Joachim so much. His set I would ask myself constantly, and this is why I wish I kept a journal, but I would ask myself, like, what is making the set run so smoothly? Hmm. It was so organized. And of course, they, you know, we didn't have a lot of time, but it felt like we had all the time in the world. Like, for these scenes, we could experiment. I never felt rushed. Everything was so orchestrated perfectly to make the actor feel the most comfortable to try different things and deliver different. And it's just not always the case. Sometimes it's like you're there. They've been spending a long time in the lighting. And it's like, okay, go
and do your thing.
Yeah. And there's a beauty in that too, but not preferred.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm very curious. Like, I often hear actors talk about how hard it is to like play somebody that's maybe drunk or something.
Oh, yeah.
But playing an actor as an actor yourself and one that's striving to be really great and struggling to get there.
Yeah. When you said the drunk thing, I thought you were going to say like, what's the hardest thing to do? And I think it's phone calls.
Phone calls. Yes.
It was so meta. And I mean, we would joke about the meta-ness. Then we would talk seriously about the meta-ness because it just was so obvious. Uh-huh. I mean, I was an actor, American actress coming to Oslo for my first time to work with a Norwegian filmmaker, exactly like Rachel. And I think, when we were talking about like the pitfalls of her character a little bit, I think it was but it's also, she's not completely serious either. You know, there is a lightness and there is a Hollywood sheen on her that you have to believe that she is a movie star, especially in Deauville, beach scenes that kind of feel like this like dream. They feel like another movie within the film. And those were my first scenes that I shot with Stellan, which was a really nice starting place. But I thought a lot about maybe like the pressures that she's under of even like, okay, going to the red carpets and she's, you know, we're like, how do we want the dress to fit? Is it constrictive? Is it tight? Like, and then I get to wear this like gold one on the beach where she gets to let loose and like ride off into the sunset when she's an actress that probably doesn't get that escapism. I'm like, I don't feel like that myself. I kind of had to play a bigger star. I don't know. I was like, okay, I'm really playing that's super famous. Someone that maybe she was in like a big franchise or, you know, she's just someone that is really known, but not known in the way that she wants to be known. And every character in the movie is so flawed and has their own kind of version of depression in a way. Because I think we kind of find her, she might quit acting, honestly, if she doesn't meet Gustav.
Yeah.
And then the beauty of her is like the surprise that she walks away from something she wants so badly. And instead of needing it to be captured on the screen, it's the experience that she had in rehearsing with him, in discovering things about herself, in being seen in a different way and seen for her talents, which she hasn't really felt before. And so probably the next thing that she goes on to do will be a great one. But she just got caught up into this surrogate, you know, she's a surrogate daughter. And caught up in this drama.
Well, even the accent too, it's like, how good do I need to sound?
Yeah.
How bad do I need to make it?
I know. You know, I did. And you know what is so funny is I probably should have done a lot more work on the accent than I did, because it was written in the script that I had to do this. But I also saw it as
you're doing that.
I'm putting it on.
Yeah.
So I listened to some tapes and Joachim would repeat, you know, Ivan's three, you know, whatever. I'm like, I can't even do it. Glasses of juice or whatever, like so cliched. And he would repeat it. And then I would repeat just like what Rachel would do. And it's not terrible, but it's not quite right.
I wonder what Stellan was thinking.
I know. Sorry, Stellan.
In doing research as I was preparing to talk with you, I read an interview that you did where you said you sometimes watch old interviews of yourself you were looking at one you did for Sofia Coppola somewhere where you're like basically a tween and you're looking. Tell me more about that. What drives you to do that? No.
Creepy.
I do that with stories. Like, what was I thinking then?
Well, I think it's like watching like an old movie, like a home video of yourself, which I mean, I also have those, like a normal child. But then there's like a plethora of these like phases of my life that are marked, like all on YouTube, of pinpointing the different ages. And it also like it reminds me of like, oh, that moment, I remember that person and working on that set, and just brings back those memories. And then there's something about it, it's like, gosh, I look at that little girl and I'm like, she's trying to answer the question so good, you know. There's something so sweet about it that you do feel a little disconnected. And I feel like I'm like looking at
from outside.
Yeah, looking from outside.
Because it made me think of this quote that George Clooney gave in promoting J. Kelly, where he plays a veteran actor, sort of assessing his career. But he said that you're acting twice if you're famous. Your job is to be an actor, and your other job is to act the part of a movie star.
Oh,
do
wow.
you agree with that? Or, like, how do you see it?
Gosh, I mean, George Clooney's, he is the movie star. I don't know if I feel that exactly, but I feel that there is a piece of myself that I keep private for me. Like, of course, because... Yes, we do the movies and we play the characters, and that's a whole other section. And then there's a whole other part of it where we're doing this and we're doing interviews, and it's, you can't help but think, well, how do I want to present myself? What do I think about that? What is, you know? And so there is a part that I like to keep kind of to myself. I mean, there's also there's not a lot of mystery in the world these days. Especially, you know, with social media. And I mean, I have all that, but I also choose to share into my personal life as much. And because truly what I love is doing movies. And if you're like, I want people to be able to escape into my roles, you know? I mean, you can't predict that, but maybe there's something to that.
Before we wrap, to stay on the themes of, you know, family and filmmaking, you're going to be working with your sister soon on Nightingale, the film adaptation of Nightingale. And it's the first time you're starring together. And I just wonder what that's like to sort of, what excites you about it, but also what it's like to develop as an actor alongside your sister and to have that kind of experience.
It could like make me cry thinking about it because it's so special. I mean, I've said this before, but I'm like a Nepo sister. Like my sister, she started from, you know, 6 years old. My mom, who, you know, came out with her, and my mom was my age. Well, she was my sister's age. How old she is now, like 32. Had no clue about the business, navigating, you know, being on set with my six-year-old sister on I Am Sam. And, you know, Sean Penn is like method in character. And my mom's 32. Like, okay, so how are we going to deal with this? I mean, my sister was very, very mature and was so...
Yeah.
They would have like serious talks about it, but it could break my heart. Like thinking about my young mom, like navigating this world and what she sacrificed for her girls. And we're very family oriented in our family. When someone succeeds, it's like we all succeed together. And this is another stepping stone to get to finally act on screen together. You know, we don't run lines together. We work now together in a producerial way. We have a company together and we really balance each other out in that regard. But, and we also are now getting to produce this film, which is, if we did it in 2020 when it was going to be originally set, we weren't producing it at the time. So I guess you can kind of see our growth of now we can.
Are you like, don't boss me around?
Yes. Yes. I've told her you cannot act like the big sister and boss me around on set. We'll see how that goes. Yeah.
Well, before we wrap, not to like put you on the spot,
okay,
but ranking the award season moments, where does being nominated rank against Jack Black finding out you're obsessed with him and taking a selfie at the Golden Globes?
Oh my God, they're high. They're really high.
Which takes the...
They're neck and neck. neck and neck.
That moment just took off for you.
I know. That was so... I mean, I said, he probably has a restraining order against me. I'm like, you know that thing where it's like I feel exposed, that I'm kind of like nervous to see him? I'm like, oh no, like he's not the creepy... freak. I'm like, I'm sorry, Jack Black.
Sure, he's doing just fine.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being here, Alan. Congratulations again on your nomination.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
All right, that's going to do it for Oscar season. Can I get a big aw?
Hooray.
It's over, but fret not. Coming up in the spring, we're going to have the Emmys covered. So stay with us. This is The Envelope.